The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
We are back, and the second hour is live. A busy day, especially if you follow NCAA matters with the United States Supreme Court. A crushing loss for the NCAA. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285. Don't forget, tomorrow we'll spend more time out in Dallas, where the CFP continues its tour across America. More later on the College World Series. And let's get back to the calls right now and check in with John, who is up next. Hello, John.
Hello.
Hey there. Good afternoon.
Is this Paul?
Yes.
Yeah, I want to ask you a question.
Okay.
What's going on with Jeremy Pruitt?
Well, I believe he is coaching with the New York Giants? Yeah, that team up in New York, the NFL club.
Did you hear what I said?
I believe so. What was the question again?
What's going on with Jeremy Pruitt? Has he got a job or what?
Yeah, I believe I'll double check, but I think he's a coach with the New York Giants, the NFL.
Well, I hadn't heard or read nothing about it in the paper.
What paper do you read?
Birmingham News.
Well, I don't work there anymore. I used to, I'll double check, but I'm pretty sure that's where Coach Pruitt currently resides. Greg is up next in Athens, Alabama.
Hey, Paul, how are you?
Okay, Greg, thank you.
Yes, sir. After reading the article concerning the Supreme Court decision today, I think it's going to do a couple of things, and one of those is force some schools to spend more money than they were bargaining for, and that's going to affect smaller schools, including the G5. And secondly, I think this is going to be a meat cleaver that's going to really separate finally the Power 5 schools from the G5, and the Power 5, I think, will go their own way, set up their own minimum guidelines, however loose they are, in regards to name, image, and likeness, and this recent hand down from the Supreme Court.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And again, the ruling is a little bit hard to describe because it's a fairly narrow case, as you know, Greg. But when you're talking about the Supreme Court, it's not so much what the case. I mean, yeah, it matters if you're you know, having an you're arguing a case about abortion or prayer in the schools or something. I mean, these are not narrow. These are very specific. But this case was about a small issue that the NCAA chose to fight because dealing with antitrust and their exemptions, and it just boomeranged on them. And it's going to be the reaction of this case. Already, Congress has essentially said today, I mean, in indirect manner, hey, you guys are on your own. We're not going to carry the water for you. We're not going to give you an antitrust exemption. And I think if you look at the, I think it's Judge Kavanaugh's ruling or Judge Gorsuch's, they're essentially opening the door for more people to come in and say and challenge the NCAA, which is exactly what will happen here.
I agree with you there, and I think it's a indictment against the tenure of Mark Emmert and the NCAA as a whole. I think this is going to give more impetus to the Power Five to form their own association and say goodbye to the Group of Five and the state schools that they play on an annual basis, which I think, as far as fans are concerned of the bigger schools, will give us a more competitive
ball. Well, Greg, you know what? If people that really cared were in charge of the NCAA management today, they would fire Mark Emmert for doing what he did. I mean, if he had been at a Fortune 500 company and had taken his company into this albatross, he would be out on the street. However, what the NCAA leadership is concerned about is bringing someone new into the equation who might go down a different path. And the reason I say that is the Power Five commissioners like it the way it is. Why do they like it the way it is? Because they run the show, not Mark Emmert.
I agree. That's why I just think that it's going to be indicative or maybe not really indicative, but it's going to be a fait accompli that the Power Five commissioners are going to have even more power once they go their own separate way, Paul.
You're right. Hey, thank you. Yeah, I mean, I know we're giving some broad generalizations here, and it's my own personal opinion that the NCAA has been on borrowed time for a long period, but it's coming to roost, and there's really nothing they can do about it. Right now, their basic power involves the NCAA basketball tournament, the baseball tournament, of course, which we're watching. But that could easily be taken by a group like the CFP. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it very, very much. Larry is in Missouri. Hello, Larry.
Hello. I just don't quite understand your rosy view about these contracts.
Okay.
Why should ESPN tear up existing contracts, which are very lucrative and are making a lot of money, and then enter into a bidding war with other entities for the new procedure? Now, as I understand it, there'll be three or four extra games, but they're going to be handled under the bowls, and ESPN already has contracts with those bowls. So I just don't see... You seem to think they'll just tear it up and go their way.
No. By the way, Larry, your point is really good. There's only one way. People don't misunderstand. I'm an employee. I am not an officer. I have no earthly idea what happens beyond what I do at ESPN. So this is my opinion. I don't think ESPN should just tear it up. ESPN's in a unique position, though, because they still have 3 or 4 years remaining. They can go in there and say, in order to make sure that we don't have to battle other entities the next time around, we will agree to do this. That's what I'm saying. I don't think the issue is as much ESPN as I do all these different entities like the Rose Bowl, who right now, if they don't budge, will continue to own that 4 o'clock spot on New Year's Day. I think sometimes everyone's interest is pretty similar. It's for the enhancement of college football. I mean, we're not talking about foreign actors here, Larry. We're talking about people that are already partners. And sometimes you have to sit down and agree that, listen, we are all collectively going to make some concessions. Therefore, if you do this, I'll do this for you. It's quid pro quo. It's pretty simple. I mean, I hope you understand that.
Well, it's going to be very interesting to figure out how they redo these contracts. That's going to be a bidding.
Well, one reason why I think there's some belief that they will do it is that here's the reason why I think the model is how it's currently situated. By giving these bowl games the second, third and fourth round games, they're still protecting their fiefdom. That's why you don't see more games on campus, even though conventional wisdom would indicate that would be a better model.
Well, thank you, Paul.
Thank you. Yeah, no, listen, I'm just giving an opinion. I'm not really, I can tell you, I don't know any more than you know. That's the, my opinion is no more valuable. I just happen to be sitting behind a microphone, that's all. We will take a break. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285. We have a lot of guests that are going to start joining us, including Pat Forty, who certainly has been following the NCAA issue for a very long time, as well as Steve Berkowitz for USA Today. He was covering the story today, and he will be with us shortly.
You are listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we are back here. Victor is up next. And welcome to the show, Victor. Good afternoon.
Hey.
Hey there.
How did we get to these 12 teams? I still don't understand how we're getting 12 teams.
Well, the 12, I mean, I think the model is the 12 highest ranked conference, the six highest ranked conference champions, and then the rest are at large. The rest are just the best, you know, the best teams chosen by the 13 person committee.
Yeah, but see, we're going to have some really messed up games there, Paul. I mean, if you start looking at it, I mean, big school versus small school and all that stuff. I mean, when Alabama missed that time, they missed. That's it. They're out. I mean, four teams, you have to earn the spot, you know? It's not just going to give you a spot.
Well, Victor, you're right. And I can't, you know, I've covered this every year, and since 2014, I can only think of two legitimate arguments. The first year, and then there was another year when Alabama got in over Ohio State, where you could have a conversation. But most years, it's cut and dried. And most years, the fourth team probably doesn't even belong.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at. And I'm like, what? How can we? I don't know. It just seems crazy to me to have 12 teams, 20 teams, or whatever. It just seems crazy. I mean, having come from a small school myself, when you see this, you know, you start going against these 6'6", 6'7", guys, 300-pound guys, I mean, it's gonna be ridiculous.
Well, Victor, nobody wants me to say what I'm about to say, but college football is becoming pro football in many respects. It really is an entertainment vehicle. That's why there are billions of dollars at stake. And,
yeah, I know it's all about the money.
Yeah, I know that's easy and lazy to say, but it's also true. And, you know, the commissioners at least are trying to change the dynamics. I mean, in other words, they could no longer really defend the four because the four wasn't working. And do you know why the four wasn't working? We've already said it. There weren't four good schools.
Yeah, Paul, I tell you, I think they should have just, I figured this out years ago, they should have just have a Power Five trophy and give small schools a trophy.
But you know something, Victor? Those smaller schools want to sit at the big table. They don't really want that smaller trophy.
That's what it is, Paul. I mean, the small schools and the Pac-12 and all that, they never get in.
Well,
they're trying to get in there now.
Who is screaming, I mean, over the last 7 years, who has screamed the loudest? Most recently, it was the commissioner of the AAC. He was here the other day about Cincinnati.
Yeah.
And before that, we all know who it was. It was the athletic director at UCF who turned a really good team into a national cause, which ended up irritating almost everyone.
National champions and all that.
Exactly.
Oh, come on, man.
They were a real. They deserved. Quite frankly, I say this as a critic. UCF deserved more credit than they got because the athletic director and the media down there just couldn't shut up, and they ended up ticking off pretty much everyone in college sports.
Yeah, I mean they were pretty good teams.
They were really good.
Small school. They were pretty good.
But they beat a good, not great Auburn team, and even though that happened after the fact, and Alabama had lost to them, that was what they tried to make a claim they were better than Alabama. It's not a conversation anyone wants to have anymore.
Like,
but that was really we see that occasionally in sports where you get a group of people that won't listen to reality and you know, they want to keep punching and fighting and good for them.
Yeah, be careful what you ask for, man. I tell you.
As much as everyone loved UCF, guess who's no longer there? The head coach left. The athletic director left. The coach he hired again. Nobody's left down there except the loudmouths in the media. Yeah, I mean, the only guy still there is Mike Bianchi, who's a talk show host, who beat the drum and really was rather sad to see what happened to Mike. He's been a friend of mine for 25, 30 years, and to see him just completely sell out his integrity for the home team is something that was really cruel for me to have to watch. Let's continue. Mitch is up next in South Carolina. Hello, Mitch.
Hello, Paul. How are you?
Hey there. What's going on?
First, first off, let me apologize for my behavior on Friday. I talked over you and I talked around you, and I get frustrated when other callers do that, and I apologize for doing that.
Well, ultimately, I should have just kept quiet and listened to you.
Well, my feelings were hurt. Somebody just got to meet you, called me out because I want to meet you, and it hurt my feelings. But, you know, I won't beat a dead horse to the point that it doesn't need to be. I have a question. What do you think about the idea if a person is able to, with their name, image, and likeness, is able to make, let's say, $50,000 in a year? Should that student not maybe give up his stipend and give up the ability to have his books paid for? And he paid for his own books?
And then I don't want to sound like a lawyer, but I don't think so, considering that's part of the agreement between the university and him or her.
Well, that is at the moment, but all this name, image, and likeness is going to be a new agreement altogether. So
That's true, but I mean, again, you're going to have to go back when you offered that scholarship and say, well, let's say Dabo Sweeney's trying to recruit the top quarterback in Georgia. I know that's happened once or twice. And he says, listen, Trevor the Third, we're going to offer you a scholarship. We're going to pay for everything that we need to pay for. But if you make too much money, we're going to ask you to pay me back. That's not going to work.
No, I understand what you're saying, and I respect it, and I believe it. But what my worry is, and there are going to be players in that locker room who make nothing.
True.
And they're going to look across the room as somebody who's bragging about what they're bringing in.
But Mitch, let me tell you, I've been there before, and I know this is not a good example, but I've been on programs where I was just a bit player, and somebody else on the show is world famous, and that individual is making tons of money off of who he is, and I'm not. But you know what you have to do to be successful? You have to just deal with it. It's like if you're, what's your favorite rock group? You told me this once. I can't remember.
My favorite rock group? I never told you that.
Well, who?
Duran Duran.
Well, that would not be a good example. Well, give me two or three names, because Duran Duran won't work in my explanation.
I guess afterwards, NXS and U2.
Okay. Well, no matter what.
U2's made buku money.
Yeah, but think about every rock group. And there's
you. Let's say Rolling Stones, Beatles.
Yeah, I mean, let's say the Rolling Stones. Rolling Stones, just for the sake of argument. Mick Jagger was a star.
Right.
Keith Richards was really good. I mean, maybe as good a guitar player as there was. But everywhere they went, people wanted to see Mick Jagger. And at some point, they had to figure out a way to ameliorate that and make it work. The Beatles, I mean, they're Lennon and McCartney were the two greatest songwriters in rock history. But you know what they did? They did that. But have you ever looked at the, you don't longer see that, but you used to get records. If you looked at the vinyl and then you look at the jacket cover and all the names on, you ever notice, when you see a famous Beatles song, whether it's Yesterday or Eleanor Rigby or A Day in the Life or I Want to Hold Your Hand, have you ever noticed what was behind next to it in terms of who wrote the song?
No.
I will help you with that. Every single Beatles song. Now, by the way, George Harrison wrote Something, which was a really big hit. Ringo Starr, I think, had one big hit with the Beatles. But every single major Beatles record song, every song, it said the same thing after the song. It said Lennon/McCartney. They ended up making a deal where they both were the songwriters, because that way they weren't sitting there arguing over every single song that Paul McCartney may have written 70% of the lyrics, and then here comes Lennon in and helps them finish the song. Do you follow my point?
I do. I do. My only concern is, like, let's say you're the top running back in the country and you're just making bank. And the offensive linemen are looking there saying, he can't even take us out to dinner.
Well, but that's, you have to get along. And we've all, I don't say we've all been there. I've been there in situations where I was the lowest paid or maybe moderately higher on the food chain, and you just have to learn to live with it. Mitch, I know that's not an easy explanation, but
no, it's a perfect explanation.
But you know, to me, rock music is bands are really my best example, because there's a disproportionate number of what everyone makes, and it causes problems. On every program, on every sitcom, on every television show, there's usually a bigger star than the next guy, but you need the ensemble to make it work. Like on this program, Danny Brams and Mark Kubiak are the big guys. I just come along for the ride, and we are coming right back after that.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
It was a very big day if you follow such things as the NCAA and court cases of the Supreme Court in a 9-0 ruling cited in favor of the plaintiff, Alston, a former West Virginia player. It's the first time the Supreme Court's taken a major NCAA case in more than 35 years. The last significant case and really opened the floodgates to the current television construct. Steve Berkowitz joining us now to help us better understand. A lot of us have attempted to explain what happened today in Washington. Steve, thank you for the time. Before we get to the ramifications, and I hate to make you go through the basics of this, but can we talk about what this case was really about before we get into all the screaming opinions? Good afternoon.
Good day. Yeah, hey, Paul, thanks a lot for having me on. Consider it an honor for you guys to bring me on to talk about this today. What the case eventually boiled down to for the Supreme Court is the question of whether the NCAA can have limits on education-related benefits that athletes can receive.
And this is something I haven't been able to understand. Considering this is fairly narrow, this is not like what we'll talk about in a minute with NIL or paying players. Why did the NCAA leadership feel like this was important to push all the way up the mountain?
Well, I mean, I think what this comes down to is that the NCAA did not want to compromise on what they felt was an issue of principle. The monetary part of this, they were prepared to settle on and did. I mean, this case was originally sort of a follow-on to the Ed O'Bannon case, and, was a little more expansive than the Ed O'Bannon case. And what it began with, in addition to the injunctive relief that it got and was the subject of the Supreme Court ruling today. It also began with a damages claim that was based on the differential in the value of a scholarship between the cost of attendance model that exists now and the previous model, where the athletes were limited basically to room, board, books, tuition, and fees. And folks forget that this case involved a settlement of $208 million to deal with those damages claims. So, I mean, there were parts of this that the NCAA was prepared to settle on. The NCAA did not want to settle on the question of a finding of an antitrust violation. And don't forget that that was the finding of the district court. That was the finding of the Ninth Circuit. And the NCAA was very eager to try to get out from under that finding and to seek a, you know, they were hoping, you know, in the best case scenario, for an affirmation by the Supreme Court of its ability to make its own rules without worrying about a lot of legal interference. And that's not what they got.
No, that's not what they got. So let's talk about what they got and what it means.
Well, what they got was a ruling that said that the NCAA, like any other enterprise, is subject to the antitrust laws and is subject to an extensive analysis of whether it is violating antitrust law. NCAA wanted a legal standard applied that would basically say that these cases could be dismissed unless they were just like amazingly egregious, and that's not what the court said. The court said that the NCAA in these instances is subject to antitrust law and is subject to an extensive analysis of whether or not they're violating antitrust law. You can have antitrust violations if with a greater benefit of that limited, you know, that constraint is, you know, is of greater value than the harm that's done to the people or, you know, the activity that's being constrained. And in this instance, the court found that the harm being done to the athletes was, you know, was a greater harm than the benefit the NCAA was getting or that was being gotten by the general public or anybody else out of the NCAA having these kinds of limits on the athletes' compensation.
So, Steve,
which is designed to create a level playing field competitively.
So, Steve, just to, for people to understand, and there was such confusion today, not from people like you who cover this, but from people like me who react to things when we see the NCAA. But this is not the NIL. That's another issue. But how does, you know, Supreme Court cases are often more than just what is said. They're interpretations. They affect political calculus. So just from the 9-0 ruling, the Gorsuch opinion, and then here comes Brett Kavanaugh with you know, a lot of headline ringing comments such as the NCAA is not above the law. That's news to me because they seem like they act like they're above everything. But so what's the trickle down of all this?
Well, I mean, if it pertains to name, image, and likeness, on a direct basis, there is no trickle-down. The issue is the NCAA's ability to sort of make its own rules, again, without a lot of, you know, interference from lawsuits and from the courts. And, you know, that didn't happen here. And so that is where it sort of begins to connect to the name, image, and likeness issue. And, you know, whether or not, you know, and the NCAA's vulnerability to continued litigation. I mean, there's already a lawsuit that's been pending for over a year before Judge Wilkin, the same U.S. District Judge who handled the O'Bannon case and who handled the Alston case. There is already a case in front of her that, you know, seeks, again, to continue to further erode at it. That case is, again, seeking a damages award that's based on the amount of money that athletes would have been able to get from their name, image, and likeness and from social media and from television revenue if these restrictions hadn't existed. So this is the same kind of deal that they pursued in Alston and then ended up being settled. That was based on, like I said before, that was based on the difference between a cost of attendance scholarship and an old scholarship. So they're looking to have athletes who won't benefit from the NIL rules compensated as if they had been. And then they're seeking to have the limits on benefits not related to education overturned. That case seeks to make it so that the NCAA can't have limits on name, image, and likeness compensation, which is part of what is built into some of the NCAA rules proposals that are on the table for the Division I Council coming up here. So a restriction, for example, that would give schools the ability to say to athletes, you can't have an endorsement deal that conflicts with our endorsement deal. You know, if those rules are set aside as being an illegal restraint of trade, then, you know, all the rules kind of go away.
Steve, what was the NCAA's reaction today?
Well, the NCAA is doing the best it can to hang its hat on what the pieces of Judge Gorsuch's ruling that give it the ability to go back to Judge Wilkin and try to make some definitions of what constitutes a benefit that's tied to education, and to get some greater clarification from her on that. And, you know, they again talk about how, you know, this doesn't tie into their limits on benefits not tied into education and their ability to continue to have those limits. I mean, that's about the best they can do right now with it, and they're trying to make the best of it they can. And they're doing their best also to sort of knock down the importance of what Judge Kavanaugh had to write in saying, look, you know, yeah, Kavanaugh had to say what he had to say, but none of the other eight justices signed on to his opinion. So those are the opinions of one justice and one justice only. And, you know, so that the opinion from Judge Gorsuch is what's going to constitute the precedent going forward, which, you know, again, in a lot of ways is not good for the NCAA.
I'll ask this in the most pedestrian way possible, but beyond all the legal writings and what it means from the strictest sense, from the people with whom you've spoken today and just your own eyes looking forward, what do you think the real meaning of this case is going to be from a perceptive standpoint, and really how does it or does it not open the door for more destruction of the current NCAA hierarchy and hold on college athletics?
Well, I think the perception of the NCAA will be that they, you know, pushed it too far and that they really got slapped down by the Supreme Court. So the perception towards the NCAA is going to be a negative one, whether or not that's aimed directly at, you know, Mark Emmert or the institution as a whole, I think remains to be seen. But so I think that's the perception issue and the perception problem that the NCAA is going to have. In terms of what happens going forward, you know, I think this ruling today may make it difficult for Judge Wilkin to quickly throw out the next case that's in front of her, and it may open the door to other litigation. And, you know, the NCAA's exposure is going to encourage continued litigation towards the NCAA, particularly if they put in place name, image, and likeness rules that carry a lot of restrictions. I think they may face legal challenge there. And so, again, you know, this will bring the NCAA back to Capitol Hill in the hope of getting from Congress some protection against future litigation. But in order to get that kind of protection, there's going to have to, clearly, in the minds of Democrats on the Senate Commerce Committee, it's going to have to be a bill that in which college sports, whether it's through the NCAA or the schools or however you want to perceive it, are going to have to provide additional benefits to the athletes in terms of health care, educational outcomes, and potentially some other areas, which, you know, there's potentially room for the colleges to do. It becomes a matter of money and their willingness to do it and how it all puts together. So I think that's where it goes in the future.
Final question, Steve. You've covered the NIL issue in Congress, and you mentioned that a minute ago, where Congress is. And I know, you know, you can't, you know, necessarily draw a straight line to any of this, but a 9-0 ruling, we know what was said. If you're a politician on Capitol Hill and the NCAA is coming for your help right now, how does or does this ruling impact or influence you?
I think it will, you know, to listen and to read the statements from Democratic senators who have put out statements today, like including the chair of the Senate Commerce Committee, Maria Cantwell, and Chris Murphy, who is a senator from Connecticut, a Democrat who's been a critic of the NCAA. You know, they believe that this strengthens their hand in terms of getting a bill through Congress that will provide additional benefits for the athletes.
Always great. Steve, I know it's complicated. You've done a phenomenal job, and we appreciate you coming on, as always. We look forward to talking to you soon.
Thanks a lot for having me on.
Thank you. Wow. What a complex but a very thoughtful conversation from Steve Berkowitz of USA Today. I don't envy anyone trying to describe constitutional law and Supreme Court decisions and how it applies to the vagaries of the pedestrian things that we talk about here every day. We'll take a break. More of your phone calls, more reaction.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We are back as we wrap up hour number two, and Ken is calling next. Good afternoon, Ken.
Hey, good afternoon, Paul. How are you doing today?
We are doing great. Thank you.
Yeah, I am transplant. I'm originally from Brooklyn, so I grew up a Syracuse fan when they played football, but now I live down here in Florida. And I have just two questions. One is an NIL question. One's a college football playoff. One, the NIL, and I hear people, you know, saying that athletes need to be paid and college athletes, and it's a $1 billion industry, and I understand that. I'm asking, who is going to protect the athlete? I mean, who is going to, I mean, a lot of these kids, I mean, come from disadvantages and inner cities and rural areas, and now you're asking them where they could probably make money. Who's going to protect them tax-wise? Who's going to protect? Are they going to have agents? Are they? I mean, I that's how I really would like to know that some of these kids that are signing these contracts, I mean, what's going to happen with that?
Yeah, I mean, there are going to be means. Listen, in terms of really protecting them, I don't know, but this is going to be managed fairly well. We had a guy on a couple weeks ago, Jim Cavell in Birmingham, Alabama, who has an organization that helps both the universities and the players. Some of it is under the auspices of an app. I know that's not exactly the perfect route, but yeah, most of the stuff is going to be fairly limited. It's not like they'll be dealing with 100 different entities, but there will be people who they will be able to use to protect them. Now, will someone get taken? Of course, you and I know that. But it's like saying just because I have a lawyer, that means I'm going to be protected. I mean, there's some really stupid lawyers in the world, as we probably both know. Hey, I hate to run. We are about to run out of time. You take care of yourself, and love to hear a Brooklynite, considering my mom grew up there. We are coming back with two more hours. We'll talk about the College World Series. We'll also spend some more time on today's Supreme Court ruling. We are coming back with Aria Gerson right now, live from Omaha.